I am now joined by Ross Gerber, President and CEO of Gerber Kawasaki Wealth and Investment Management, who oversees some $2 billion in client assets. And earlier this month, Advisor Shares launched the Gerber Kawasaki ETF, ticker symbol GK, which of course is managed by Ross. Gerber Kawasaki is the sub-advisor on this ETF. And Ross is now on the line with me from Santa Monica, California. Ross, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Well, first, congratulations on the launch of this ETF. I actually saw that you rang the opening bell at the New York Stock Exchange recently to celebrate this. I'm just curious, how did that go? Had you ever rang the bell before?
It was actually an amazing experience. I've never done it before. I've been on the floor of the exchange many times in the past, whether for to learn or through television spots I did on the floor. And so I always kind of hoped one day I would do that. It wasn't really my goal to go public, like with my company. So it wasn't, I didn't know if that would ever happen. So the fact we decided to launch an ETF and got to ring the bell was sort of a semi dream come true. And it was an amazing experience. So I'm really happy we were able to do that.
All right. So look, obviously your firm, Gerber Kawasaki, you're a wealth manager. My understanding is that you work with quite a wide variety of clients. You're managing $2 billion in assets. From my perspective, right, things appear to be going really well. So let's start with why you launched this ETF. How did this fit into your business model?
Well, first of all, you know, it says wealth management, but really we have two programs, one of which is helping people build their wealth. And we work with a lot of young people, and that's been kind of the key to our success, is we don't have minimums at our firm, and we have a program, whether you have $50 million or whether you have $50,000 or whether you have $50, we have a way for you to get invested with us. And that's an important part of our growth and success, is democratizing financial advice for people. The ETF concept was really born out of the idea that so many people today maybe don't want to actually use our financial planning services, and they sort of do it themselves on the various platforms, the biggest being, let's say, Schwab and TD Ameritrade. But now with all the online platforms like Robinhood and Webull and Square and a million of them really globally, we wanted to give investors the opportunity to invest with us no matter where they are, and even if they were doing it themselves. And the ETF presented an incredible structure for us to do this in, because it has enormous tax advantages for active traders.
I'm curious, what about the social media element here? So I saw some comments you made to CityWire where you mentioned how, look, you do have a ton of engagement on platforms like Twitter, but as you were just alluding to, perhaps people aren't necessarily looking for the full services offered by your RIA, and so an ETF can absolutely bridge the gap here. Do you want to just expand on that a little bit more in terms of this social media element?
Yeah, well, we're kind of the first firm that really embraced social media, and this started when Facebook was launched, and, you know, it was 2008, when we first got in trouble for posting on Facebook by our compliance department, and we gained a lot of followers quickly. And when I launched Gerber Kawasaki in 2010 with my partner, the basic concept was, how do we leverage social media and the internet and online advertising to build a bigger firm without the traditional bricks and mortar branch style and without the traditional advertising that a lot of firms do? And we were able to successfully do this throughout our you know, career, which was really hard, because getting people to actually work with a financial advisor through social media had never really been done successfully, and it wasn't easy. But over time, we honed our message and really was able to get out what we do and how we do it to people, and it's worked very well. Now I have probably 160,000-odd followers on Twitter, which is crazy in my mind that so many people would follow a financial person who basically talks about stocks all day. But stock trading has become incredibly popular again, like in the 90s. And that was also the impetus. So there was really two things. One, stock trading is cool again. You know, it's taken 25 years, but we're back to, you know, when I walk down the street and I'm talking about stocks, actually people care. You know, it used to be sort of like, oh, this guy's in the most boring job ever. So that's increased interest. So we wanted to have an ability for people to take advantage of that, on top of the fact that with the Biden administration taking power and where the difficult situation that America and the rest of the world is still facing with coronavirus presented a good backdrop to make investments for the next decade based off basically our thematic viewpoint of the world. So we think the next 5 years looks very, very good for America in particular, and we wanted to take advantage of that growth and give people a vehicle to take advantage of it.
On the social media, do you think we'll see more of this where social influencers or technical experts, whatever you want to call them, these types of people getting involved in ETFs? I mean, we saw that earlier this year with Barstool's Dave Portnoy, Joe right. Pompliano, Matthew Ball, obviously your ETF. Do you expect to see more of this? Do you think this is the start of a trend?
Well, there's two types of people. There's people like me who are actually real investment people who are launching an investment product. And then there's marketers like Joe and Dave who actually know very little about investing and are marketing investment products for other companies. And so there's a difference here. So I do think that the celebrity endorsement side of our business will continue to grow, especially with the new SEC guidance on testimonials. But I also think the power of these social followings is what's really driving it, because traditional advertising doesn't work anymore, really. And so the leverage of social is huge, and we've seen that. But I do think for actual people to launch an ETF, and I can vouch for this, I've spent 3 months dealing with compliance, legal, and regulatory, and it's a nightmare. So the fact we were able to do this was only because we have a perfect track record working with clients and no complaints and lawsuits and a clean record with the SEC and a long-term track record. I mean, you have to really be, have your ducks in a row to do this. It was much harder than I thought, actually.
On that note, in terms of getting the ETF off the ground, how did you connect with Advisor Shares? Like, how did you decide on working with them?
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting story, because I actually do work with Roundhill Securities, and I'm close with them, and we're close also with Global X and ARK, which are also thematic investment firms. And, you know, they approached me about doing it more than I approached them. But the reason I wanted to work with them once the idea was put in my head was, first of all, the president and CEO of the company, Noah Hamm, is just a great guy, and their team was really complementary to the team I have, and their expertise is obviously very different than mine. The structure worked. Being a portfolio manager, sub-advisor for them, works a lot better than me starting an ETF company. And most importantly, they had proven to me that my outspoken views, this was my biggest concern, wouldn't bother them. See, I talk about politics, I talk about, whatever I feel like talking about on the internet, and sometimes, especially politics, people get tense because, I'm an anti-racist, I'm an anti-Trumper, and I'm vocal about these things despite the backlash I get. And so, I wanted to work with somebody that understood that I stand for more than just making money. A lot of our investments are politically driven, whether it's for climate change. We very much believe oil companies and the auto industry is destroying the environment. And we're very vocal about that. So I'm not the kind of guy to partner with if you're squeamish about controversy. So Noah was like, hey, man, I love this stuff. And we run the biggest weed ETF in the country. And I was like, the fact that this guy's bet his career on a weed ETF and he's willing to deal with me, it sounded like a match made in heaven. And so far, so good. We really have a great relationship so far.
All right. So before we get to the details of the ETF itself, how do you like to describe your firm's overall investment approach or philosophy? So if I became a client tomorrow, and let's just say I'm a fairly typical client of your firm, what would I expect my portfolio to look like, just at a high level?
Well, it's basically the same. So that was really the idea, is giving, whether you're a client or just buying an ETF, you basically have the same portfolio. The difference is the customization to your risk tolerance and your preferences, which every client has. So how much bonds we add in a portfolio, maybe overweight certain sectors that we typically are invested in. But our thematic approach is really born out of my almost three decades of experience as an investor, where when I started investing, I noticed certain themes in the 90s, like the rise of the PC and such, and we invested as such then, and it was an incredibly profitable time. And then the 2000s, we invested in the rise of mobility, cell phones at the time, and social media. And then in the last 10 years, we've really benefited from the growth of technology, and as well as other areas like EVs and clean energy. So, you know, now as we look over the next decade, and really the concept of our ETF and investment management style is what are the transformative things that are happening over the next decade, thinking long term, and we want to invest as such. And we currently have 9 major themes that we're investing in. And so by buying my ETF, what happens is you're getting a diversified growth portfolio that's, sort of like you don't have to think about like, oh, I want to have this weighting this and this weighting and that, because we're already doing that for you. So when you invest in ARK or Global X, which are great firms that we have a lot of money invested in, you have to actively manage your actual allocations to the different sectors. When many of these sectors come in and out, as we've seen with like ARK K, where, you know, it's done incredibly well last year, this year it's underperforming by a large amount. And that's because it's only in one sector. So by using my ETF, you smooth out the ups and downs of the different sector allocations, but ultimately, ideally get a higher rate of return.
Yeah, and a couple of things I'll add here to the ETF, ticker GK. This does allocate across the market cap spectrum, so it can hold large, mid, and small cap, approximately 45 holdings. And then those themes that you were mentioning, Ross, this from the press release, pets living as humans, video games mm-hmm. as new social media, areas that used to be illegal, as you were alluding to, cannabis and online gambling, climate change, so clean energy and transportation, top brands consumers love, real estate disruption, innovation in healthcare and biotechnology, technology, artificial intelligence, and then streaming, sports, entertainment. One question I have is, if I look at the top holdings right now in the ETF, two are actually ETFs themselves. So there's the Global X Lithium and Battery Tech ETF, ticker LIT, and then the Advisor Shares Pure U.S. Cannabis ETF, ticker MSOS. What is the decision making here on using an ETF versus targeting some, you know, individual stocks in those areas?
Well, it was the fact that I couldn't do that is why we're using the ETFs. So because I wanted very specific exposure in these sectors, and in these cases, these are foreign stocks that make it prohibitive for me to invest in as an ETF, because we're basically a domestic ETF. And many of them, you can't even trade, like some of the South Korean stocks and LIT that we wanted exposure to. So this is, you know, the MSOS gives us exposure to Canadian, basically small cap MSOs here in the United States, which are multi-state operators, which are the people who are really selling weed in the United States. So U.S.-based cannabis companies can't list in the U.S., and therefore my ETF can't buy them individually. And so we bought the ETF to get that exposure, because that was really the only way. And the same holds true with the LIT ETF, which gives us the absolute perfect exposure for battery technology and the commodities around it. But many of these companies are sort of Chinese, South Korean, Japanese. Some are pretty obscure companies. They don't trade in the U.S. And so we wanted to get those exposures, and this was the only way. And that's why they're there. And that's why I think it makes our overall portfolio a little bit more diversified and a little bit more unique, because we do have 10% of the portfolio essentially in this diversified basket of foreign growth companies in cannabis and battery technology.
Okay, you know I have to ask you about your third largest holding, Tesla, because I've seen you chop it up quite a bit on Twitter over this company. So what do you like here? Because I would say, at least from my perspective, there may not be a more polarizing company and a more polarizing CEO than Tesla and Elon Musk right now. It just seems like investors either love or hate them. Just in a nutshell, why do you fall in the camp of the former?
Well, I've been an investor in Tesla for the last 8 years. It's been the most profitable investment, one of the most profitable investments of my career. And for the size of the investment we had, it was, in dollar value, the biggest investment gain we've ever made. So by all means, I have a lot of love for Tesla for a good reason. That being said, where Tesla is today is they've never been in a more dominant position than they are today, compared to in the past, where they were really struggling just to get the car out and in scale, which they've now succeeded at doing. They've become one of the biggest companies in the world. And the future for Tesla is amazingly bright. because they essentially have no competition that successfully scaled EV production. They really have monopolized battery production and cell design, which is a game changer. They're at the forefront of AI and autonomy, which is like full self-driving is about to just be the most incredible thing we've seen. And everybody thinks it's a long way off. It's not. And then we're not even discussing solar and battery storage, which is just in huge demand and a must need. But their dominance in cell technology and AI, it's just, I've never seen a company so far ahead of the curve in technology, and it's a must own for investors. So it's the top stock holding in our fund, and I think Tesla's going to have a really bright future.
Why do you think they're so polarizing then? You know, out on Twitter, you have these Tesla shorts. I mean, are these people who have missed the run-up that are just, you know, sort of bitter about it? Or why are they so polarizing? Or why is the company so polarizing?
So like guys like Elon Musk are very rare because they kind of bear it all every day on Twitter. And, you know, Elon is crazier than me, that's for sure. And you know, so when you deal with people who are willing to put up memes, attack lawyers, you know, do all the things that CEOs sort of are fearful of, it just creates a polarization among the people, especially, you know, a lot of people who are more traditional minded, who are like, why would he say this? Why is he doing that? You know, he's dating some crazy music woman. He named his kid X, you know. So these things to modern youth culture are super cool, but to traditional Wall Street, it's like, oh, he's this crazy weirdo, you know. So I think, and it's kind of the way I am too, we put a lot out there on Twitter about how we think and feel, and not everybody agrees with us, and that's okay, but there's just a certain amount of haters out there, and it can be for any reason, and I'm sure there's, you have probably a few haters too for no reason. You know, like, if you put your stuff out there and you're really trying, you get a lot of positive, and there's a certain amount of negative that comes with it. And if you focus on the negative, it sucks. But if you focus on the positive, that Elon is one of the most followed people in the world, and Tesla spends not a dollar in advertising. This is unbelievable for a car company selling, let's say, 1 million units over the next 12 months, that they literally spend nothing on advertising. So think about that value when Ford is going to spend, you know, I don't know, what do they spend, $1 billion on advertising? You know, it's crazy. So, you know, or more. So, you know, with the Super Bowl, I was just reading the Super Bowl ads are going for $6 million, and it's 85% sold out, and he can just tweet and get more engagement than a Super Bowl ad. You know, love it or hate it, it works.
All right, Ross, just a few minutes left here. One thing I did want to ask you, it's interesting to me to see an ETF where, if I look at the prospectus on GK, you were outright saying that one part of the process for selecting securities is your own qualitative analysis of a company. And of course, we've been in this world where passive investing has ruled everything, right? And investors are just shoving money into index funds. And I'm sure you've seen all the data out there on how traditional active management, right, it's underperformed as a whole. If you look at SPIVA scorecards or whatever, why do you think you can buck the trend here in terms of performance?
Well, there's two things. One, you know, past performance is not indicative of future results, but my past performance has been phenomenal. So, you know, that's just that. And my clients will obviously happy to tell you how happy they are. We've had a really great run, especially over the last 5 years. So that was sort of what has prompted the tremendous inflows into our firm as well, because we work on a referral basis. Like, we actually don't spend much money on advertising either anymore. And so it's really, you know, an awesome experience. Secondly, I say the same thing to everybody. When I was in high school, only a very few people were going to get into an Ivy League college. And so many, many people apply, and most don't get in. I think they take less than 5% of the applications, and somebody gets in. And so, yes, the vast majority of people aren't going to trail the index, but it doesn't mean that everybody trails the index. It just means the majority doesn't trail the index. But it, depending on the year, it can be anywhere from 20 to 40% of active managers beat the index. You just have to be with those managers. Just the same, most basketball teams suck. And the few that are really good, you want to stick with. So maybe it wasn't a great year for the Lakers this year, but I wouldn't bet against them next year. So I think the same holds true that we have a time-tested process that I've done for almost 30 years now, my entire life, and I'm going to continue to apply the same things over the next decade. I'm 50 right now, so this is the sort of the prime of my experience and as well as my abilities, I think. And so I wanted to give it a shot. You know, the truth is I can't promise that I'm going to beat the markets. I'm going to try really hard. I hope to do that, and we'll see in 10 years, you know. But I have for a long time, and I do think if you look at the actual statistics behind the fund and the actual holdings and the earnings growth, there is a methodology behind beating the markets, which is basically having higher earnings growth for the right valuation than the market. And so, you know, we think we can do it, and we'll see, you know.
And then in terms of portfolio application, just to be clear, do you view GK as like a larger core holding in a portfolio, or is it more of a satellite position?
No, exactly that. It's a core holding because we saw so many people coming into the firm with just a bunch of satellite positions. You know, like we see a lot of people coming in with, let's say, they own some, you know, Bitcoin, they own some, you know, some Tesla, they own maybe a few shares of AMC and some ARK. And I said, you know, that's not a portfolio. I get your speculation, but you need a core growth fund. And that was really the idea with the ETF, was to be a complement to your ARK holdings, your Global X holdings, your MEM stocks, whatever. But put this in your IRA. You know, this is a growth fund. It's a core growth fund. You can buy your other things. I know you're a do-it-yourselfer. That's fine. But have something that's solid and diversified. And that was really the idea, is to be sort of the new growth fund of America, where these are the new growth opportunities that we see over the next decade. And if investors want to follow up by their own customizations, that's kind of what we do within our firm with our clients anyways, too. So that's the idea. It's a core growth fund, and ideally we'll get young people focused on the long term and investing in these great themes.
And I meant to ask you this earlier. Is it possible that you could use a ETF for existing clients of Gerber Kawasaki? Like, could you hold this for your advisory client portfolios?
Yeah. And in fact, you know, we're working on the process right now to have it even available to our clients, which it isn't currently. So for us, it's an efficiency in two elements. One is the tax advantage of ETFs. We generated over $20 million in taxes on our Tesla gains last year for our clients. And it's real, real frustrating when they have to withdraw lots of money to pay taxes, even though they've made a lot of money. And with the ETF structure, we're able to transfer shares for shares instead of selling those shares. And it allows us to defer taxes for clients. And so this is a huge advantage for our clients. If they have new money, they can buy the same portfolio they have now, but it's essentially like an IRA. It's tax deferred versus their current situation where everything I do is taxable with gains. So that's one huge advantage. And the second is efficiency on smaller accounts. Because we manage a lot of small accounts, they don't always get the diversification that we want to have. So we use a lot of mutual fund companies and other products as well that also have a cost to our clients. So we were like, our clients really want our money management, not, you know, us farming it out because their accounts are too small. So now it gives us the ability to offer, you know, if you've got a $3,000 account with us, we can just get you in these 40 stocks. Because normally I just can't buy you 40 stocks with a $3,000 account. So there's this efficiency that is huge for our clients, especially if they have multiple accounts, which many people have. So there's a lot of advantages to our clients. It's not something we're just going to, you know, stuff down people's throats, because our clients already have this in a way, you know, and it's just customized to them.
Well, Ross, with that, we'll have to leave it there. Congratulations on the launch. I certainly wish you the best of luck. Really appreciate the discussion this week. Really interesting hearing about this ETF. Thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
That was Ross Gerber, President and CEO of Gerber Kawasaki Wealth and Investment Management.